CollegeFootball.com will let you know how you can get all his content, both college and pro. Chris, Jason down in Alabama, ask Chris why Bama's defense is struggling, and he also asks, is it Pete Golding? Is it Pete Golding's problem? Is he the reason for this?
Well, you gotta look at specific situations against Florida and against A&M. Both of those teams did a really good job of mixing up their front and creating a lot of confusion. I thought Alabama made great adjustments at halftime last week. They completely shut down A&M until the last drive. I think that's a loaded question, which I can't quite answer. I would encourage you, if you would, not to dismiss it, but for the sake of time, to do an accurate job, to go and listen to my Alabama football scouting report that I did yesterday on the Alabama show to get the correct details. But the bottom line is, you're dealing with a number of issues. Pete is running Nick's defense, okay? Nick doesn't. He'll go hire offensive coordinators and give them a framework, and he'll give them a little leeway. But the defensive guys, whether it's Muschamp or Kirby or Pruitt, they were all guys that he groomed. So it is very fair to criticize the defense, but it really comes down to the head coach. Because the head coach, you know, believes in what they're running and how they're running it and how they're calling it. Could they do it better? That certainly can be debated. But they had some big-time issues seeing some unscouted looks. They made several adjustments in the first half, but A&M was a little bit of a step ahead. But at halftime, they figured it out. Also, Pete Golding and Nick Saban and the entire staff did a pretty good job against Ole Miss. So there's some good and there's some bad with it. There's no doubt. I think the bigger picture, too, is that people that compare Kirby Smart, Jeremy Pruitt, well, you know, the guys in the past, remember, they're not running the same type of offense that they were running back then. There's a big part of making adjustments that I don't think people understand. And when you're running a high-tempo offense, you, A, put your defense in peril because they're on the field too much, but they also have less time between they leave the field and they have to go back again. So it's not only just the wearing out of the defense, but if your offense, and this is what I talk about when you talk about complementary football, if your offense can't sustain drives and your defense is back on the field, you don't have enough time to make the adjustments, which is why you have to do it a little bit more at halftime where you do have time. Because if you've got a long, sustained six-minute drive on offense, well, you not only can rest your defense, but you can make some adjustments. You can survey from up top what your coaches are seeing. You can go through every player. What are they doing to give you trouble? What have you not seen that we went over? And you can correct those things. But you can't correct it if you go three and out. So a lot of people separate offense and defense. You cannot do that. How you play offense is how you play defense. Okay, it's linked. Just it's, you know, how one affects the other. So keep that in mind. That's not the complete answer, but go check out the Alabama Football Scouting Report. It's free right there on LandryFootball.com. It's the hour show that I do every week in Alabama, and it'll go into all the details of exactly what A&M was doing and exactly what Alabama was doing and how they adjusted back and forth. So
CS in Atlanta, ask Chris how he stacks Georgia's front seven up historically.
I don't. I mean, every team's different. Every year's different. It's really good. It's, you know, it's played well. You do that over time after everything's done. So probably can address that at the end of the year. It's a really good defense in an era where you don't have a lot of defenses that played like it. But to compare a defense historically, you have to compare what type of offenses you're doing it against. So to compare a defense, say, to the 70s and the 80s or early 90s, where you're going up against completely different style of offenses. So everything is different and predicated on who you're doing it against and the style. So it is a very impressive defense considering the style of offenses that you play. But you know, I think that's more of a question that I can reflect on at the end of the year, not now.
Jim in Jupiter, ask Chris if he thinks Georgia can win a national championship with Stetson Bennett at quarterback, and could they win it with JT Daniels if he doesn't get the reps he needs because of his injury?
Well, you've got a generic thought of, okay, can you win with this guy or that guy? All you got to do is win the national. We're talking this year. So, yes, I think they can. The answer to both. Can and will are two different things. We're going to have to see how some other teams progress and what are the challenges come playoff time if they get there, which I think Georgia's in good position to get there. In theory, in generalities, against a really good defense where you might have to score and be a little bit more explosive against really good defenses, you might need better than Stetson Bennett. But at this point, do I like Georgia's chances against anybody else that's near the top with Stetson Bennett? Heck, I think Tony Bennett could lead Georgia against some of these teams. I think they're good enough to win, yes. But, you know, I think that may change a little bit as we get towards the end of the season. I think we're just going to have to see. I think he's playing well. But in general, you'd like a little bit more explosiveness. But, you know, it might be good enough for them to win it this year. I don't think there's the normal number of playoff caliber teams this year at this stage as I normally see at, you know, the mid-October stage of most years.
While we're on the topic, that Kentucky-Georgia game, what gives there? Does Kentucky have enough roster power to go in there and pull this off?
Here's what Kentucky can do, or here's what I would do, and I think they will do. First of all, they're very good defensively. They're very physical. They do a good job, particularly in the short passing lanes, and they do a good job rallying to the ball, and they're very physical up front defensively. And it will challenge Georgia. Will probably run more outside zone because the way Kentucky plays their defensive ends, they're in a four-eye technique, which inside shoulder of the tackle. So they compress a little bit more towards the ball. They take away the A and B gap runs pretty well. So it'll be a little bit of a challenge there for Georgia to kind of work through that. People watch the Georgia-Auburn game, if you study on tape and know what to look for, you can see that Auburn had some success for stretches against this Georgia run game. But Georgia tends to wear you down, and I think they could be some of that going against Kentucky's defense. Kentucky offensively, very good offensive line. I would definitely, it's a must, that they do a couple of things, that they get Will Levis involved in the run game, force Georgia to defend that extra gap, and then obviously get the ball in space to Wendell Robinson as much as you can. Now, Josh Ali is not going to be in there, and he's usually kind of that, the way they run their routes, it usually runs a lot of clear outs for Wendell Robinson. So they're going to have to do that without him this week. So that's going to be important that they find a way. Do they have enough explosiveness to pull it off? No, and it won't happen unless Georgia turns it over, gives Kentucky a short field, some cheap points. You know, Georgia will do probably what they do to most people, and that they will grind you, and it's a four quarters game. So if you like most people, watch highlights or watch games and flip back and forth, you don't really see the splash plays which people are intoxicated with. It's more of a butt-whipping over time that Georgia gives you, and it's the cumulative effect over four quarters that, you know, a 10-0 lead feels like, you know, 17-0. In a, you know, a 24-3 game, it looks like it's, you know, it's a 40-10 game. And so I think you're going to eventually see Georgia wear out Kentucky. I don't know that it's a blowout. I don't know if it's three touchdowns. I think it's a gradual wearing out. I think there's a decided advantage by Georgia. Look, Georgia's got to handle the moment. It's a big moment, not the biggest moment. They're better than Kentucky, but, you know, they can't make mistakes. They can't give cheap points. You can't do that. I don't anticipate a problem. I see something similar, but not as bad as what happened last week against Auburn, because Kentucky's better than Auburn, but I see the same result. I don't think Kentucky can beat them. I think Georgia would have to help the cause and maybe contribute towards losing it, which, look, I wasn't here last week telling you that. Let me tell you about the path to A&M beating Alabama, because I didn't see that. It can happen, and we'll see whether Georgia can take care of business. It looks like they've got that mindset that they're on focus to do just that, and I expect them to do it this week.
About a minute and a half before the break, America 1970 in Columbus, Georgia, says, Chris, what teams has surprised you this year the most, both good and bad?
I don't know. Let me get to that after the break, because I'm not sure that there's a lot of – I mean, I don't
– Ohio Michigan State?
Ohio State slow started.
Yeah.
Is a surprise on the negative end. Oklahoma's offense is a little bit of a surprise. Michigan State, Arkansas are better than I thought they would be. And it is – and by the way, Wake Forest, too, although they're not as good, they just are in a weak conference, but they're doing their job. All of them have the same thing in common. They all transfer portal, you know, fortified. And, you know, that's a real key, and that's a big part of roster management. So those are three. Michigan looks a little better at this point. I don't know that they're better. Those are some of my thoughts there. You know, Oklahoma State off to a good start. I don't think that's going to be sustained, but those are some of my candidates.
More Chris Landry, and we'll let you know how you can get all of his information as we continue. Omni, Nashville Hotel.
Good morning. Traffic still limping along here on 40 eastbound at Briley Parkway as they clear up this accident. Hopefully it'll be back open here in the next few minutes from the looks of things. They've got a rollback here. That red pickup truck's on the back of the rollback. Again, it's still slow over here near the airport, but as they clear this rank 40 eastbound at Briley Parkway, yes, the heaviest flow is going the other way on 40 westbound. All that traffic coming out of Mount Juliet. Oktoberfest and Ober Gatlinburg going on now through the end of the month. You got about 2 weeks left. You'll love it. Check it out at obergatlinburg.com. I'm Commander Chuck with your on-time traffic.
Prescription products require an online consultation. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Think you might have ED? Not sure? Well, we'd like to let you in on a little secret. ED is common. About 40% of men experience ED by age 40. But the solution is simple. Find it at 4hims.com.
I didn't have to talk to a doctor in person. There was no copay, and the medication was shipped right to my door in discreet packaging.
Hims took care of it, fast and easy. Now our love life is better than ever.
Get access to doctors online who can prescribe you FDA-approved ED medication if appropriate. The same active ingredient as name brands, but 90% cheaper. Skip the waiting rooms and pharmacy lines. Get a free medical consultation and rise to the occasion or your money back. Go to 4hims.com/joy to get your first visit free. No copay required. The only way to get this special offer is to go to 4hims.com/joy. forhims.com/joy.
For those of you over 40 years old, I want to talk to you about Soul Tea. It's been proven to help lower cholesterol, lower blood pressure, and encourage overall health. If you're lucky enough not to have heart disease, keep it that way. Start taking Soul Tea today as a preventative. And right now, listeners to the show, save 25% when you go to soultea.com/radio to get started.
Go golfers. It's time to tee it up at Edwin Watts Golf Shops for the Callaway Apex Trade-In Event running now through October 31st. Bring in any of your old clubs and receive a 50% trade-in bonus towards new Apex 21 irons. The Apex, Apex Pro, and Apex DCB are designed with artificial intelligence for faster ball speeds. Swing by and get custom fit today. Edwin Watts Golf Shops, home of the 90-day satisfaction guarantee.
Get all your NASCAR news every weekday right here on the Final Lap. Hey, it's Kerry Murphy, and Kyle Larson did it again. His third road course win of the season, seventh overall. Up next is the Bad Fast Texas Motor Speedway. So grab all the latest NASCAR news, race recaps, driver interviews, stats, and info every single weekday right here.
Hi, this is Kyle Larson, and you're listening to the Final Lap with Kerry Murphy.
Check out the Final Lap podcast every single day of the week. Every single weekday right here.
All there is to know about Johnny Five Star, and now you can too. It's Bill King.
Yeah, I'm glad Clay linked this there on Twitter. And this is really where I wanted to go next with Chris. Chris Landry with us, LandryFootball.com. Oklahoma's student newspaper apparently spied on Oklahoma's practice the other day, reported that Caleb Williams was getting more of the number one snaps over Spencer Rattler, and now I think they've threatened all media and no access. I don't know all that's going on there, but apparently it's a big snit that's happening. So, Chris, I want to maybe ask you about that, but Caleb Williams, Spencer Rattler, your estimate on what's happening there and Lincoln Riley's thought process.
Well, the thought process is you have to get more reps for Caleb Williams. The generic, you know, fan media thinking is, see, Caleb Williams turned the game around, and that means that's what you got to do going forward. Well, it's not as easy as just put them in and, you know, you plug it in like you plug in an outlet, okay? You've got to get him more reps so that he can absorb a game plan, and he can do that on a more sustained basis. I think getting him more reps, I think getting him ready to be the guy is important, because the biggest problem they've had offensively is people have played a lot of two deep shell, and they've narrowed the throwing windows, and they're trying to force the ball into those windows, and that's the biggest problem. The offensive line has not been as productive as it has been in the past. They are not as good or as committed to the run. And by the way, they are never committed to the run enough, but they're even less so this year. And what has happened is they are limited in their explosiveness, because what people are saying much, you don't follow NFL, but in that's what people are doing to the Chiefs. Make them go the distance. Make them go 12 play drives, and they'll frustrate them because they want to score so fast. It just, you know, you throttle them down. And so that's what people are doing. They've got to be able to run the football, and they can not only – they can absolutely improve their running game with Caleb Williams, and what that could do is get people more out of the two-deep shell, and then they can throw the football because they're going to have greater spacing and coverage. Against Nebraska, they were running it the entire first half against two-deep shell, and Nebraska was shutting them down. Well, it's not like, Oklahoma's offense just disappeared overnight. That's the general thing. No, it's more to it than that. Why? Because people are replicating, let's play two-deep shell correctly, and then let's force them to go to distance. So you got to run people out of that. And I kept thinking, run the football, Lincoln. Just run them out of that look. Then you can have all the, you know, the big plays and splash plays you can. So I think they're going to have to maybe do more of that. But I also think that, like last week, two-point conversion, they have to take Caleb Williams out of the game, because he didn't even know how to run that two-point play. That had to be Spencer Rattler. So I think it's going to gradually be more Caleb Williams, but it's going to depend on what they can do with him, how he can handle it. And it is a huge difference between, you know, you're not prepared to play this guy, and it's a spark. It looks great, and it's a difference. And I'm not comparing the players. But remember when everybody before the LSU game, folks said, oh, you got to bench, you know, Bo Nix and go with T.J. Finley. Yeah, not so much. Okay, sparking is not the same thing as a full-rage fire. So what they've got to do is they've got to take that spark of Caleb Williams, build off of that so that he can become more sustainable, yet probably try to see if, you know, what if he goes down with an injury? You can't, you know, everybody said, wow, the heck with Spencer Rattler. Yeah, except midway through the second quarter this week, if Caleb Williams goes down, who are you turning to? Well, you better have them both prepared. Those are things that the coaches have to deal with that the fans and the media don't really see, and they just say, just get rid of this guy, whatever, or just, you know, that's not as easy as you know.
Want to stay with this one briefly. Spencer Rattler, just watching him, and Will over in Northwest Arkansas brought it up too. He's a big Oklahoma fan. Just watching his body language, Chris, he looks like he's lost his confidence, obviously. And it's tough. He's probably not had to deal with this most of his life. He's Johnny Five Star, right? Mm-hmm. Not only that, Chris, but he goes from potentially the Heisman favorite, at least in preseason type polling, mm-hmm. for whatever that's worth, to maybe not the starting quarterback.
Sure.
Where would you evaluate his draft attractiveness today?
Look, the physical skills are still there. The physical skills of being able to make all sorts of throws, that's it. What it really comes down to, and everybody, I heard that a lot. We heard that with Jay Cutler in the NFL, the body language, the look. And there's, you know, that's something to look at. It doesn't tell you all you need to know. I don't coach the kid. I'm not with him every day. I don't know. Part of what we do in the evaluation process is what is the kid like? So there's all – I've seen different scenarios. So you've got – if he is someone, and I'm not saying he is, if he's someone that maybe is – a lot of these guys are, they're all told how great they are. Maybe just taken to coaching. Maybe it's not quite the same. Maybe the leadership skills are not quite what they need to be. That's going to have a huge factor. You know, there was a lot of that. That was, you know, one of the reasons why somebody like Jay Cutler was limited. He had all the physical skills. He wasn't a real good leader, and he wasn't a guy that people rallied around. I don't know. Maybe that's Spencer Rattler. Maybe it's not. I don't know. Everybody says, well, I know this. I thought nobody knows anything. The only people who know are the people that coach him. And that'll be uncovered behind the scenes. But what we see is just what you said. You see certain things. Of course, there's frustration. But, you know, again, I'm going to go back to, well, he's just having a bad year and he's overrated. He's this, he's that. Go back to what I just said about there's a lot of reasons for that. And you just don't go from being really, really good to really, really bad unless there are real substantive reasons for that. And I can take you back to a lot of players that couldn't play, quote unquote, that are making a bunch of mistakes, that are frustrated, or bad attitude and didn't handle it well, but end up being really, really good players, both at the college and NFL level, because it's not about what you see. It's about what's behind the scenes, what leads to it, and whether it's correctable or not. Some things are, some things are not.
This is an interesting one. I did not know this would come up today, Chris, so put this under a different type question. Pac-12 Dave down on the Emerald Coast, but he's from Washington, says, ask Chris, does Nick Rolovich, head coach for everybody, Washington State, survive because of his refusal to get the vaccine? And just for everybody, if you don't know the story, he is seeking a religious exemption and doesn't want to take the shot, and he's not. And it's, Chris, again, it's caused a big uproar over there. It's one of the big stories out that way in the Pacific Northwest. So I know this is a guesswork question, but what do you think happens here? is the question.
Yeah, and because it's really non-football related,
yeah.
It certainly can evaluate the football part of it. It's too early, you know, in his tenure there to make the football judgment. Nice win last week, but in Delora starting to play well. By the way, for people who don't know, that's where Jared Garantano is. I don't know if many of the Tennessee fans remember that or care, but anyway.
Chris, Chris, let me just interrupt you. I know that because this spring, the very first film that hit Twitter that I saw was a spring game, and the first pass was a pick from Garantano.
Here's the thing. On whether he survives the whole vaccine, you know, religious exemption, that comes under a different category, and I have no idea how to handicap that. I know what has been discussed, and I haven't investigated, wouldn't know how to investigate it, not really interested in investigating that part of it. I mean, if it's a, you know, at the state university and it becomes, I don't know what their political views and is that a violation of stuff? I mean, it sounds like one heck of a lawsuit to me of if they try to do that and fire them because of that, but I don't know. So I just don't have the answer for you politically there because that's a different political thing. It's different than when we talk about politics of, look, they're not happy with this coach. You know, they want to make a move. They want to buy him out. They want to do this. They want to do that. This is more of a, they're not looking in terms of that. This is strictly a unique situation medically that I just don't know where this is headed, but it's a mess. I know that, that's definitely the case. And all of that, nice win over Oregon State last week.
More speculation here, Chris. If Coach O continues to take L's, and you've told us it's just a matter of when, could they pull it, though, during the season?
The plan is to do it after the season.
Okay.
There are circumstances which could necessitate moving it during the season. The most likely time would be the bye week. It's, you know, for people who will run what you will do it now, first of all, I can tell you firsthand, Scott's doing his homework, and there's really no advantage to, you know, letting him go now or letting him go later. Now, if there's something that is embarrassing, I'm not talking about on the field, but off the field, that would necessitate an immediate dismissal, then, of course, that would happen. Scott is very aware of the PR and the political side of this. So most people that know what's going there on there know that this is going to happen, and most people are understanding that is. But there's also that national narrative, which you will hear when this happens. Oh, this is ridiculous. He won the national championship 2 years ago. They don't know what's happened behind the scenes that's led to some of the issues. And they're saying, it was a COVID year last year, and then they had a bad year this year. This is ridiculous. And they didn't even let him finish the season. So I think that in reality, ideally what Scott would like to do is let this play out during the season because it's going to be less of that talk when the record finishes what it's likely going to finish at the end of the year as opposed to them letting him go during the year. But that really depends upon some of the behavior patterns, some of the other issues I'm sure you've kept in touch with. Look, there's the players have let go the rope. They're not even. Coaches are looking for jobs. Players are, you know, there's some legitimate injuries, but I'm telling you, half those injuries that you're hearing about, if they were unbeaten and getting ready to line up to play Alabama, they'd all be playing, you know, from what I'm told. You know, that the injuries are, hey, they're going to step aside, you know, I'm going to take care of myself, I'm going to put it out there. They make sure to say, hey, I'm going to fight back to get with my team because they want to squash that narrative of, oh, we you know, but they're not. They're not coming back. They're not, you know, they're moving on. The ones that feel and get word that, look, you need to come back. You need to play a couple of games to improve your draft stock. Then they'll come back. The ones that have got their draft stock secured, they ain't coming back. They're gone and they're not looking back because everyone knows what's happening, what's going on. It's just a matter of when they decide to announce it.
Chris Landry, LandryFootball.com. Do you think Coach O mentally is resigned to the fact that it's over?
Yes.
Yeah. He's fighting media. He's just his behavior, and he's always been kind of quirky, but it's kind of getting real chippy.
It is. And then you're going to get the questions that are uncomfortable.
Right.
You know, it's like, you know, it's look, I mean, I don't want to make a sympathetic figure out of him because he's made his bed, but he's getting asked those questions that you get asked when things get really tough. And so you're getting agitated and you're going to end up getting more of that. And, you know, you're getting, he snapped at the press conference on Monday, because he kind of was asked a question about the future, and he snapped at a guy that he kind of felt was baiting him into saying something more than what he had just already said. And, you know, keeping your poise and having a lot of polish, that ain't Ed Orgeron. I mean, you're talking about a guy that's as, you know, rough as can be, and that's what he is. I said it all along, good or bad, it's, and a lot of those, the way he handles things is the way he's always handled it. But, you know, now that he's on his way out, it's being looked at and scrutinized. And so, yeah, it's, he knows it. And that's, right now it's just, dealing with it. And Scott Woodward, it's one of those things. Somebody asked me on my show, one of my shows yesterday, is like, well, has Scott Woodward told him? You don't need to tell him. Scott Woodward is with him every day at practice. He, you know, he sees him. They meet every Monday. You know, and it's not like, you know, Ed, you don't have that conversation. You don't have to have that conversation. You know what I mean? And I don't mean to be dramatic, but it's like when somebody dies, there's a somber mood. You don't have to sit there and talk about, hey, let's talk about how your mother passed away. I mean, it's a known thing. It's inevitable. It's coming, you know, so it's, that's kind of we're in that hospice stage of the situation. So nobody needs to say anything. Everybody knows it, feels it.
Chris, tell everybody how they can get your information.
LandryFootball.com. Check out our SEC show, all our conference shows. Got all the detailed breakdowns of all the games, all the teams, all the players, all the schemes. Check it out at LandryFootball.com.
Good job, Chris. See you next week, sir.
You bet.
There you go. Mr. Chris Landry. Just incredible. A little later, hour 3, Catch will be with us. Jeff Ketchum, Omni Nashville Hotel.